meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from a little cave on a tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened and a vision was revealed. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing in the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it has always been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let us now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, and author of A Mother's Plea for the Winds Have Changed. Together, we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
God bless everybody there. Welcome. I'm Father Thomas Kois here on The Winds of Change, our marvelous hour of theological and philosophical and personal ranting and raving and investigating. How's that for an introduction, you guys?
Sounds good.
It included everything.
Yeah.
But before we start, we just want to wish, he's not here, but we want to wish Father Anthony a happy birthday. It's his birthday today.
Oh, marvelous, marvelous.
Nick, right on time.
There you go.
Happy birthday, Father Anthony.
Yes. It's good because if he was here right now, it would make him really uncomfortable.
That's why I did it today, because I know he doesn't like it.
And here's me thinking here right on the other side of the table here on my microphone. They didn't play happy birthday on my birthday.
We missed your birthday.
When you weren't here on your birthday.
I keep my personal life close to the chest, you know?
March, though, right? Was it?
It was in March.
Uh-huh.
It was indeed.
I think we did say something.
We might have. But we didn't play happy birthday. All I know, no. I just remember that.
Well, since we missed Father Kois's birthday.
No, we got work to do here.
Happy belated birthday, Father.
Exactly.
That's right. We are rolling up to Palm Sunday this weekend, of course, and I want to get our listeners into the right spirit to really desire to dive into Holy Week. And best way to do that is to review the great stories of the Triduum. And it's so rich, you know. You don't know where to start and where to one thing leads to another, to another, to another. So, now we may have a surprise a little bit later on in the show. One of my wonderful friends. Remember a few weeks back, we had some of the children from John Paul II School.
Mm-hmm.
And we might get a question from them one way or another if we can pull it off at their school. They are in religion class now. But anyways, my first thought that I want to share with our people today, with Palm Sunday coming up, Palm Sunday, the meaning and the story of Palm Sunday really gets overshadowed and lost in the story of the Passion. When you go to Palm Sunday Mass, we listen to the reading of the Passion.
Mm-hmm.
There's that little gospel that we pray, that we read before the entrance procession. And that's really the essence, you know, that's the story of Palm Sunday. We open up the Mass and then we're right into the Passion, which is the story of Good Friday, of course. And so I would like to concentrate just a little bit on the Palm Sunday. And Nick, maybe I'll just throw it open to you. You know, when we think of Palm Sunday, I think I'm right? You sort of get lost. The Palm Sunday story is a little bit lost, wouldn't you say?
It's true. Now that you've said that, I'm thinking about it. I love that little gospel before, but then you're right. It just goes into the Passion and
then we lost.
We're not thinking about...
Here's my main point that I want to open up with is... because the Passion is the main thing in our mind on Palm Sunday, and the Passion, of course, is the downfall of Jesus, or is death, of course. we lose a sense of the great glory of Jesus on Palm Sunday. Jesus, it says in the Gospel of John, chapter 12, he enters into the next day when the great crowd had come for the feast, heard that Jesus was coming to Jerusalem. They took palm branches and went out to meet him and cried out, "Hosanna, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord, the King of Israel." Jesus found the donkey and sat upon it, as it is written, "Fear no more, O daughter Zion. See, your king comes, seated upon the colt." And indeed, that's a beautiful scene, you know. We lose that. I heard it said this very simply, and it's worth a lot of our thought. And it brings us to today, too. It makes the gospel, it makes reading the Bible stories, not just going back in. We all know that I love history. Well, at least, I don't know, some people know that I love history. And I love the history that we find in the Bible. But if you're just looking at the Bible as a history book, you're missing the reason for reading the Bible in the first place. It's supposed to hit you today. It's supposed to shine light on the history that we are living today. Yeah, am I not right? And so what we should grasp, what we should fully appreciate is here's a time when the crowd really got it right. The crowd was praising the Lord. We don't usually associate crowd with getting it right, you know? I don't know if you're a basketball fan, Tony, but that, I try to get interested a little bit in the March Madness. And but darn it all, if the stories of the riots overshadow the whole
game
thing of basketball.
Yeah.
You know, the crowds, just to think, we're in such a crazy state in our society today. They rioted in Connecticut, and they rioted in Kentucky. For those who don't know, you know, Connecticut beat Kentucky in the basketball championship. And there were riots in both cities. How do you explain that? You know?
You can't.
It's irrational, and it's a sense of this spiritual hunger, the spiritual vacuum, the intellectual vacuum, the anxiety, or the looking for a reason to lash out, mm-hmm. and be angry, to destroy. I think it makes us all think, probably all of us, even the most patient of people, and I think I'm a pretty patient kind of guy most of the time.
Most of the time.
sometimes people say that I have too much patience. You know, there's some, and I think I know what they mean by that at times. But we've all had those moments when we get mad and we break something. You know, being angry and breaking something seems to go hand in hand. It's hard to say why, but I think we'd all reckon it does. Mm-hmm. You know, what does that accomplish? What does that mean? Why do angry people like to break things?
The frustration, but it's not. They're frustrated. That's how they cope with things. Not that it's the right way. It doesn't solve anything. It makes things worse.
Got up this morning. I wanted to break something.
And it's not a good thing.
It's not a good thing. But that answer, Christine, just begs the question. Mm-hmm. Why does anger make you want to break things? And the answer that they're frustrated, just then I could say, well, why does frustration make you want to break things?
It keeps going on.
You can keep going on and on. And so, you know, speaking of frustration, we'll get back to this basketball thing and get back to the Palm Sunday thing. But mm-hmm. I remember, Tony, you were frustrated at me, the wonderful substitute host here at Winds of Change.
Yes.
You said I broke a promise.
Yes, you did.
You know,
for many months now, I believe.
It's been, I don't know that, I can't even remember what it was that we were.
Something about your dating.
experience. Oh, the dating days? Or?
I have a mind.
Oh,
I remember those
my
things.
Gosh.
I wasn't here, Father.
I've had people come up to me everywhere and ask that question.
Inquiring said, well, minds want to know.
Yes, you got it, Father.
It was what? It was what?
Something about your dating experiences?
Yeah.
As a young man?
You mean I was supposed to relate some of those experiences?
You're supposed to tell us something about that, and you kind of left that in the air.
Jeez.
See, because then that means that people have to tune in. People have to tune in. That keeps them, you know. Yeah. Just kidding.
We are a professional radio station here.
Right.
Oh, yes.
We do not want to break promises.
You know, rules have been broken, so.
You're not saying I deserve time in the punishment room,
you know, I something has to be done.
Wait a minute.
Here we go. He's
protesting. Oh, my gosh. More professional. You're going to have to go to confession now. You're beating on Father.
Can I come out now?
Okay. I'm sorry. It had to have been done.
It hurts. It hurts.
Just for a little bit, but grow from this.
It's a good kind of hurt, you know, because it pushes you to face the truth, you know.
It's called tough love, right?
It's tough love, even here on the Winds of Change.
But I believe, Father, if we're going to be fair, I mean, I think our last show was so controversial that both Christina and I had debate afterwards that you had to witness.
Oh, yeah.
And I personally think it wasn't the best thing, although it was off air. So I think
Tony, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was a little bit off air that Christina made a faux pas. You know, she tries to maintain the professional standards of this great radio station.
Yes, she does.
We were talking about the Green Bay Packers, and I was explaining about the football team and where they got their name because they were packing the meat and shipping
it back.
Off. Indeed, and she didn't realize they were the Green Bay Packers, but.
Right.
Okay, open that punishment room again.
I think...
Open that punishment room.
Oh, no.
Christine,
no,
it's for your own good. It is for your own good.
Sorry, Christina, but...
Oh, my gosh, you're hurting me.
I'm just a girl.
Just be gentle, please.
All right, sorry.
I had it coming. Right. I deserve it.
That was part of, I don't even think I should share with the radio station, the radio listeners, the whole story. But
right. She
mispronounced the word Green Bay Packers, and it turned out to be a kind of a not right good word.
And, but we don't like Green Bay anyway. So.
We don't like Green Bay. Yes.
Well, I'll make a confession. I thought for all these years, I thought they were the Green Bay Packers.
Right. That was now you're thinking of like woodpeckers,
you know? Yeah, the woodpeckers,
or like birds or something. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. That's what we had to put her in the punishment room for then. How did we get off to this?
I have no idea.
Well, this is old business that had to be taken care of.
We are coming
now.
Upon,
we're all good. We're
we are
good.
Coming upon the Holy of Holy Weeks, you know,
right.
And this is
our punishment.
Palm Sunday coming in exactly. But that concept of a crowd getting it right. This is the point I want us to think about. Yes, when Jesus entered into Jerusalem, there was a spirit. There was a sense of he is the king. And he was the king.
Mm-hmm.
They were honoring the true king. And it's almost as if the authorities were on the sides waiting for something to go wrong. And of course it does. And they were able to turn the crowd against Jesus. But this is a time it got it right. And like these crowds with the basketball victory and loss, you know, mm-hmm. rioting because you can, or getting a sense of violence, break something when you're angry, is something that we really need to pray about if that's anywhere close to your personality.
Mm-hmm.
Break things when you're angry. And it shows it's really the most opposite. It's the step before suicide, mm-hmm. in a certain sense.
Mm-hmm.
Those who have ever had that terrible temptation of taking their life, you know.
Mm.
There's a sense of anger at the world. There's a sense of hatred of the world, and you're going to destroy something. And it's almost as if I'll destroy myself, and that's going to somehow solve something, or that's going to make something better. It's a complete denial mm-hmm. of rational thinking. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of going out and celebrating a victory or a defeat with riot is something, it's a strange mole, it's a strange blemish. It's more than a blemish, it's a cancer. It's a strange societal mm-hmm. Disease that infects us. So I think the only way that would really change is when another crowd crowds it out. Because I heard a talk, one of my favorite late night radio show host, Dennis Prager, that's actually the voice you hear on The Punishment Room. Okay. He had a sociologist on, and he studies these riots. And he was saying that there's been studies and there's been efforts to try to quell or squash or defeat these crowd riots by having the president of the university or a congressman or a star athlete do some public service announcements, you know. Okay, if we win, don't go out and trash mm-hmm. the city.
It's sad that you have to do that too.
Isn't it?
You know, have to put an announcement. Yeah.
It's very sad.
It's like it's big, or have them say, you know, have some class, don't trash, or
right,
something.
Or something,
you know,
like that. Yeah.
Well, what the sociologist mm-hmm. discovered was there was no effect. They can run those in those markets, in those cities where they ran the ads,
and it didn't.
They still rioted. Where they didn't run the ads, they still rioted. And he came up with a good point, and that's what I was just mentioning. The only way to stop a crowd from doing such a thing is for another crowd mm-hmm. to say no. If I would imagine most of the rioters are guys, you know, mm-hmm. more violent nature, physical side of human nature. If these are guys turning over cars or something, the crowd of girls were to all of a sudden say, are you stupid, crazy, you know, stop mm-hmm. doing that, stop doing
it's
that.
It's like grow up.
There may be a chance mm-hmm. that the guys would stop. And if the girls are there cheering along with their other friends, there's no...
It encourages
stop.
Them to keep it doing
it. It'll encourage them, exactly. So anyways, let's rejoice on this Palm Sunday coming up mm-hmm. that the crowd in Jerusalem got it right. And it's kind of like the great feast of Christ the King mm-hmm. that didn't come about until the 19th century, especially in response to what was going on in Mexico. Mexico, being such a predominantly Catholic country, was experiencing such turmoil and attacks on religious freedom and especially Catholicism that the Pope was moved to create the Feast of Christ the King. So let's take a little break. And let's go back into the scriptures and some of the issues that we need to apply to our own day and age. I want to talk about some of the things that are associated with something called Common Core. And when we get back, I'm hoping to pull in Father Coleman from John Paul II School. I'm Father Tom Coyes, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
We're in the penitential season of Lent. As we contemplate and participate in the three pillars of Lent, prayer, fasting, and almsgiving, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy at St. Stanislaus Kostka is open so that you may place yourself before the Blessed Sacrament in the iconic monstrance. Stations of the Cross are held in English and Spanish on Fridays after 7 p.m. Mass, followed by the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. On Sundays, Stations of the Cross will be in Spanish at 4:30 p.m. Come to St. Stan's this Lenten season, corner of Noble and Evergreen, one block north of Division, just off the Kennedy Expressway, St. Stanislaus Kostka. Christ is waiting. The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Ladies, would you like to know what it is that men really want? I am Father Thomas Lawyer with a Theology of the Body moment for the Tabor Life Institute. In complement to woman's body, the body of a man is designed to act upon the environment, to go up against things greater than he is. Men are designed to defend, protect, tear down, build, resist, invent, in short, to accomplish the task. Their greatest desire, therefore, is to be told that they have what it takes, they measure up, and have indeed accomplished the task. Conversely, a man's greatest fear is to be told that he is not adequate, that he is a failure. A man wants to see reflected in the eyes of his woman the essential message of his manhood. Yes, I do believe in you, honey. You are my knight in shining armor. Ladies, when a man hears that message, he will do anything for you. To find out more about the theology of the body, visit taberlife.org. Taberlife.org.
God bless you for tuning in to The Winds of Change. I'm Father Tom Coyes. We're getting ready for Holy Week, huh? And trying to shine light on the story of Palm Sunday, which gets lost in the reading of the Passion on Palm Sunday. But that little gospel before the procession illustrates a beautiful sense. I'm positive about human nature when I hear that crowd shouting Hosanna to them. And that's something that's very difficult for many of us, you know, to have a positive sense of humankind, you know. Though some other people will have a strong sense of, oh, humanity is always good. There's really no thing called sin. Everyone's really good, and the only thing that's really bad are religious freaks. You know, there's those kind of philosophies or ideologies. Mm-hmm. You know, and that can be. Before the break, I said I wanted to touch on some things about something called Common Core, and I also wanted to touch on some of the historical issues where Christ the King, I mentioned in Mexico, that the political spirit, the political movement was so bad against Catholicism that it inspired the Pope to create the Feast of Christ the King. Here I found another interesting little example from our own United States. The anti-Catholic history in the United States is a bit of a blemish, and in some sense that a lot of people don't know of the stories is a good thing. It's kind of like you don't talk about your dirty laundry about your family when you're out at the supermarket. You know, you forget when you're out at the supermarket, you try to say how wonderful your family is. Well, that's good. But that being a preface, it's still important for us to know that there is a strain in our American culture that is quite anti-Catholic, and we're seeing it arise again today. Mm-hmm. This time, though, I think we, Catholic and Protestant, are about a lot more united, at least or especially in those religious people who are pro-life, that have this sense of the dignity of life and now the dignity of marriage. There are many religious that want to hide the right to life issues and the marriage issues. But that's what we're facing today. I found a little, the first Supreme Court Justice of the United States was John Jay. Not the guy Jay's Potato Chips was named after, I don't think. Although he might have had a grandson that made potato chips. But John Jay was the first Supreme Court Justice. And here's something. I got to do a little background on the history of this to make it make sense. Because we know that the American colonists were primarily English, you know, the British transplants. And when America tried to establish itself as its own country, there were British colonists against British monarchists, even in the United States and especially back home in England. And in order to squash the revolutionary spirit that was bubbling up in the colonies, King George III actually tried to do some nice things to the Catholics that were living over here in the colonies. And he called it there were two major things. One called the Peace of Paris of 1763. That's quite a bit before, you know, 4th of July, 1776. And then the Quebec Act of 1774. That was because France up north, of course, in Canada, what is now Canada, was by and large mostly Catholic. And so King George thought, hey, if I could tell those little English or British colonists who were basically Protestant to give more freedom to the Catholics, that'll make the Catholics less likely to join those Protestant colonialists in their revolt against me, the king. And so he made some laws, one of them called that Quebec Act, which granted greater freedom for Catholics in the colonies. And didn't work. it may have changed a few, but the spirit of revolution was even reached the Catholics, because there really is a sense. The same kind of thing was happening down in Mexico, except earlier. The spirit of wanting to be your own nation is kind of like the spirit of a teenager wanting to be his own family. You know, a teenager yearns to be an adult, or they should. They should want to, although I think there's a trend today for teenagers to want to stay kids their whole life. You know?
That's even adults.
That's another problem we're kind of facing. But in a natural course of things, you don't want to stay a subject of your parents your whole life. The trouble with a lot of families is that a young person will grow up. They don't want to be subjects to their parents, but they want to be fed by their parents, you know, or housed, or, you know, those kind. And there's a tremendous immaturity that goes along with that. And that's why there's a clip from the news when Obama was talking about his health care proposals, and he said, I'm going to allow you to stay on your parents' health care until you're 26. And they all were cheering. They kind of like, we don't want to grow up in a sense. You know, it wasn't all that, because they knew how hard it is to get a good job, how hard it is to get a good job with health benefits. So it was a form of being saved from a difficult life situation. But in a certain sense, I'm disappointed with that young crowd that would cry and scream and applaud so well, because they're a little ignorant of the burdens that their parents are carrying. Mm-hmm. It shows a lack of understanding about what being on your own is all about. And parents, of course, love their children, want to do the best they can with them. But that is another bad sign of our culture today.
Or they grow thinking, oh, I can't wait till I leave. I don't want to be told. I mean, who likes to be told what to do?
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't want to be told. And it's like, that's not reality. Because when you become an adult and you're working for someone, there will always be somebody telling you what to do. And the reality is, oh, when I become an adult, I'll do whatever I want. That's not reality.
Yeah. That fits into another thing about the history that I was doing a little reading on. Did you know that that many of the prominent Protestants in the early part of the American history were so afraid of Catholicism that they talked about, keep the Pope out of the United States. They were telling people, we better squash the Catholics because the Pope is going to be over here and they're going to build a new Vatican in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Wow.
There was a famous cartoonist by the name of Thomas Nast, and he obviously drew a lot of political cartoons, and there's a bunch of them about the fear of the Pope coming out of the United States, which is what was happening down in Mexico as well. Even though there's the Catholic spirit, the leaders were constantly warning the population the Pope is going to try to rule over us. So we got to be anti-Catholic. We got to hold those Catholics down. As a matter of fact, you know what Morse code is, probably. You know that the dots and dashes when the telegraph was first invented. You know, you couldn't talk over it like we do now, but you could get dots and dashes, a very primitive form of communication. The guy who invented Morse code was Samuel Morse, and he said this. He said, Roman Catholicism equals despotism. Protestantism equals freedom. You know, and that, the reason I don't like to drag up old wounds in a certain sense, but it's necessary to learn something that's going on today.
That's right.
There's a revitalization of this sense of keep Catholicism in its cage, keep it underground, force it to just be a private matter. Actually, all religion, you know, it's a private matter, and it just doesn't work. The thing that is so wrong about that reasoning is that, okay, we've kept the Pope out of the United States by and large, pretty much. As far as I know, there's no new Vatican in Cincinnati,
no.
Ohio.
No.
And so the absence of the Pope doesn't make peace. The absence of the Pope doesn't guarantee peace.
Peace.
Mm-hmm. You know, and here's the point with the passion that I want to hit to. You know, when you think of the different, the story is so rich, of course, there's so many things, but one of the most powerful parts of the passion that I always center on is, this is when Jesus is before Pilate and Herod.
Mm-hmm.
Pilate, of course, and Herod were both Roman officials. It was Caiaphas who was the Jewish official. You know, those are the three characters, primary characters. Where it says, so they question, if we know the story, it goes back and forth. Pilate gets him first, and then he hears, you know, he knows it's a kind of a religious debate, and he says, oh, it happens over in Galilee. Oh, well, you better go talk to my friend Herod. And Herod then gets to see him. And when it says, when Herod saw Jesus, he was very glad, for he had a long desire to see him, because he had heard about him, and he was hoping to see more sign done by him. So he questioned him at some length, but he made no answer. The chief priests and the scribes stood by, vehemently accusing him. And Herod, with his soldiers, treated him with contempt and mocked him, then clothing him in gorgeous apparel, sent him back to Pilate. And here's the point that I want to stop and think of. And Herod and Pilate became friends with each other that very day, for before this they had been enemies with each other. The point I want to make is we're passing into a new time, in a new epic, a new era, a new age in the story of the United States of America, where before, many of the Protestant churches were united in what? In their antagonism against Catholicism. There was a unity that formed within many Protestant sects, not because they were pursuing the good or the true or the beautiful altogether, but they were united in an antagonism against Catholicism. The new era that we're living in now is many Catholics of a pro-life, I'm just going to say Catholics of a pro-life, pro-family stand are more united with some of the Protestants of a pro-life, pro-family stand. And that unity is more of a sense of the Spirit of God than the unity that is displayed by those who are united in a negative, united in a I'm against, That's what's alive and well today. And so one thing I'm not against is good old Catholic education, because this is where we're supposed to learn all this stuff and develop a great affinity, a great love, not to be embarrassed by our Catholic history and our Catholic beliefs, but to be proud of it. And one thing we're proud of is I think we have Father Bob Coleman on. He is, I think, in his school teaching, as many good, wonderful priests do around town. Father Bob, can you hear me? And are you, wait a while, maybe now you can hear me.
Can you hear me now?
That's when you come on. You can say your name,
okay,
school, and what grade you're in.
Hey, okay. Father Bob, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
There you are.
There he is.
You got a captive audience of eager minds.
I sure do. Let me put you on speakerphone right here.
We got to hear the children say, "Hello, Chicago."
Okay, go ahead. I have you on the speakerphone. You can go ahead and say, these are the seventh graders at John Paul II. Say,
hi, Father John.
There we go. And have them say, "Hello, winds of change."
Okay, now you say, "Hello, winds of change."
Okay, there you go. Okay, and now tell them to go home and turn their AM radios to 750 and mark a little alarm clock at 11:45 so that their moms and dads will listen to us.
Those who speak Spanish, because most of the programs are in Spanish all day, and most of them speak Spanish.
And many are bilingual.
You ready for the question?
Their credit. Yeah, we're talking about Palm Sunday and the coming Holy Week and the Passion of our Lord. I did ask Father Bob before the show, would any of the kids have a question for us? Did you find somebody, Father Bob, with a question?
I sure did. Seventh grader, he has a question for you, and here he is. I'll let him tell you his name and ask the question.
Hi, my name is Joshua Zamboa, and I go to Pope John Paul II Catholic School.
Joshua?
My question was, what can I do to keep cheering for Jesus like the crowds did on Palm Sunday?
Good question. I like that. Tony or Christine, you want to take a shot?
Tony.
thank you, Joshua, for that good question.
What can you do to cheer?
To keep cheering.
Wow, I guess walking. I guess walking that walk,
mm-hmm.
remembering that walk that Jesus did,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
always having Him in front of you and knowing His sacrifice
mm-hmm.
is a good way.
Yeah. Keeping close to Him, being that living example
exactly.
of Christ's love and the love that you have so that others can see it, so you emanate His love. And when people see you, they know that you love Christ.
They see him,
that's right.
Did you hear that, Joshua? And did you hear that, class? I hope so. I'm going to say, Joshua, with your question, one of the things that every young person, as well as us older adults, one thing that all of us need to remember is that crowds can get it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Crowds can get it wrong. When you see, don't try to make your life decisions or your assessment of what's right and wrong by just, we have a phrase that goes like this. Don't just wet your finger and stick it up in the middle of the air. If you know, when you're trying to find out which way the wind is blowing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what that analogy means, Joshua? You lick your finger and put it up in the air. That means your finger is wet. Mm-hmm. And so if you're trying to find out which way the wind is blowing from, you'll feel the wind on your finger mm-hmm. more easily because it's wet.
Mm-hmm.
And the wind will make your finger feel a little colder where there's moisture there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see what I'm saying? And
yeah, I think I do. As a matter of fact, I have them all raise your fingers. They hold their fingers up in the air.
They're all trying it.
They're pointing up to the
pointer finger to the Lord.
Wet your fingers like this. Okay, wet their fingers. Now, does it feel cold? Do you feel the air?
There's a breeze there. Wind.
They feel it. And some people make their decisions, like Bertrand said, by that error. And that's not always the right decision.
No. Do not try to understand the teachings of our Lord. Do not base your religion and your understanding of faith on just a mob.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you can associate yourself with the mob that gets it right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In other words, I'll ask a young man who's sitting here next to me, Alejandro. You know, you've been taught that to be a good Christian, you go against the current, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know what that means, right? And that's what they're being taught as being good Catholics now in seventh grade that carry with them to go against the current. Don't do what everybody else mm-hmm. is doing, right? But do what is right. Follow your right conscience.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Father Sam, there's a young lady who has a question. How about another question?
All right, let's take one more before the break.
Okay.
Yeah.
Give your name nice enough.
Hi, my name is Angela Garza. I go to Pope John Paul II.
Hello, Angela.
And my question is, what should I do special during Holy Week?
What should you do special during Holy Week?
Yeah.
Yeah. I want you to remember a funny word. It's called the Triduum.
Mm-hmm.
The Triduum. The Triduum means 3 days in a row, Good Friday, Holy Thursday, Good Friday, and Easter. You can even maybe say 4 days because Holy Saturday and Easter Sunday is in there. But hardly anything goes on officially in the church. So if you can go to those, if your mom lets you stay up late enough, if you're able to sit through a Mass that's longer than a regular Mass, can you do that? I challenge you young people. Can you go to a Mass that's almost 2 hours long?
Let me ask you for the time. Would you like to go to a Mass that's more than 2 hours long? Raise your hands. Will you go? Well, I don't see any two hands up. Okay. Now they're going up. Because that's the Easter Triduum, and it's a longer Mass. But those are very special days, like Father Tom said, mm-hmm. the holy days. But you know, Father Tom, Angela's question, what can you do in Holy Week? That's what they should do, like all good Catholics, go to the Triduum.
Yes.
But also, I like to encourage these young people, but also all people, to make Holy Week special by mm-hmm. extra prayer. And here's a word that, let's see how they respond to that. During Holy Week, a lot of silence.
Mm-hmm.
You like silence? You like silence? The teacher's raising her hand. She loves silence. How many of you students in seventh grade love silence? Raise your hand. Oh, I see about three hands up. Four, five, six. Oh, okay. Not too many. Do you think it's possible you could give up video games and cell phones during Holy Week?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they said no. That's what you need to do.
That's what you need to do. Or television, too, unless it's a good holy movie.
How many can give up television during mm-hmm. Holy Week? Oh, a few hands on up. Good. Okay, mm-hmm. we got some saints in the making here.
That is so good. Yes. Well, Father Bob, we're up against a break here now, and I want to thank you for being with us and those marvelous questions.
Very good questions.
Very good.
Let's keep praying for those in Catholic schools. And speaking of Catholic school education in general, there's some issues that I want to share, something called Common Core that we need to talk about a bit. We'll be back right after this quick break. I'm Father Tom Coy, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You're listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
You've heard us say that Winds of Change is listener supported. That means you will help us stay on the air with your dollars and your prayers. And we are asking for that help now. Please take a moment and go to our website, windsofchangeshow.com. That's windsofchangeshow.com. On the upper right-hand side of the page, there is a link. Support Winds of Change Show. Click on that link and donate securely with any major credit card. With your help, Winds of Change will continue to bring you the truth. The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Glory to Jesus Christ. Hello, I am Father Thomas de Loya, and I invite you to join me on the Light of the East pilgrimage to Rome and Istanbul to celebrate the canonization of Popes John Paul II and John the 23rd. In addition to celebrating the sainthood of two world-renowned popes, this trip will be a powerfully moving and truly unforgettable experience of the Church breathing with both lungs, East and West. We will visit major religious and historical sites of the ancient Roman and Byzantine empires, and you will hear from people who actually knew these two saintly popes. I guarantee you will never see the Church the same way again, and you will be making your personal contribution toward the cause in which these two popes were committed, unity in the Church between East and West.
Join Father Loya Tuesday through Thursday, October 21st through October 30th for this spiritual event of a lifetime, the pilgrimage to Rome and Istanbul. Limited spaces, reserve early by going to VikingTVL.com. That's VikingTVL.com for all the details. October 21st through the 30th, sponsors Orientale Lumen Foundation and Viking Travel.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. I'm Father Tom Kois. We're talking here about Holy Week, Palm Sunday. And I want to touch on a topic because it does teach with touch on issues of education. There's obviously a tremendous, tremendous amount of money spent on our educational systems. And it's a little ironic to me as our population of children shrinks, the amount of money we're spending is growing.
Yeah.
And it seems that there is never enough. And I want our listeners to think carefully what I'm going to say. Oftentimes when societal issues are battered about and talked about, someone comes up with the phrase, well, we need to put more money into education. I want everyone to be skeptical about that. That is not a sure way. Yes, at times our educational system needs funds, but proportionately, and can they continue to do the same with the same amount? Sometimes I think our country would have a renovation of knowledge and work and all the rest if we took some of the money we were using for educational issues and put it into maybe streets and sanitation.
Especially this year, this winter.
Yeah.
Filling potholes.
or building some new infrastructure, mm-hmm. repairing bridges, mm-hmm. and or maybe the park systems, you know. And everything always goes to the people say, well, it's the education. It's your children. It's your children that need this money. We do it for the children. Mm-hmm. And people buy that lock, stock, and barrel, by and large. And something that I think has to be cautiously approached is something called Common Core. Mm. I'm not a great expert on it, but I've been doing a little reading and a little research. And what I'm seeing and hearing is scary in mm-hmm. some ways. Mm-hmm. And you could relate it to the story of the Passion, Death, and Resurrection of our Lord, because number one, Jesus didn't save us, or we could say Jesus doesn't save the world by his teaching. Jesus didn't save the world. His greatest act of redemption was not the putting on of awarding of an award to a smart person. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying mm-hmm. is that it was his death, mm-hmm. his sacrifice of himself, which included a tremendous act of the will. And you can be as smart as a whip and not have a strong will. And, you know, more money will not strengthen our wills, as it were. Yes, it will help us understand better certain things. And I'm not advocating doing away with education. Of mm-hmm. course, not. Right? Although, curiously enough, during so many chapters in our nation's history, that doing away with intellectual pursuits was part of the problem. In looking at the history of religion in America, you stumble across a guy by the name of Joseph Smith, the founder of Mormonism, the Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints. He also was caught up in that idea that Jesus is coming back again. And so we better be prepared. That was part of a renewal, a revival of dying out Christianity. And for that, he's to be applauded. But his whole religion, his whole church was based on his translation of those golden tablets that he received up in the forest, up in northern New York. And he actually did this. In order to translate those golden tablets, he went into a room by himself. He wouldn't let others in the room with him. And he wore special glasses, like secret decoder glasses. Mm-hmm. It sounds almost comical. Mm-hmm. It sounds silly, but that is part of the story of the beginnings of the Mormon Church. And so a good education, intellectual pursuit, intellectual excellence, educational excellence is a virtue. But what I'm saying is that Jesus didn't save the world. The story of the passion, death, and resurrection of our Lord involves will, the will, and the mind. It's not just the mind. So what things will help train our mind are just as important as what things will help, what things will help train our will are just as important as what things will train our mind. And just throwing more money into education, especially when the educational spirit and philosophy says you don't teach values. You can't, and that's what I'm worried about, this Common Core thing. It's an interesting talk. You could check this out on the internet if you can, by a Dr. Luksic, Luksic. She had a very interesting talk on some issues that she brought up. There's many various levels, but let me just start with one. She says, by implementing a Common Core curriculum for all public schools, and unfortunately, I think the Catholic schools will be made to follow it as well, you're going to have a curriculum and an agenda that tries to teach the lowest common denominator. And the class won't be able to proceed to the next level until everybody gets it.
That don't sound right.
So to speak. And teachers are worried about that, because obviously any classroom of five kids or more, you know, if it's 25 or whatever, you're going to have some kids that get something and some mm-hmm. kids that don't, and in different subjects. Yes. And she says by trying to make it a curriculum that's mandated to only teach everyone the same thing at the same time, and you can't divide a teacher. And many wise, good teachers will see, oh, Johnny's really good in math. He's going to whip through this lesson. I got to give him a higher caliber book. And over here, I got to spend more time with Johnny because she's having a hard time. Maybe there's a group of three that need to work slower, mm-hmm. et cetera. And so they're worried that this method of teaching is going to hurt the future of America, because we're not going to have as strong, well-educated populace. So she says it's a lowering of the bar. And you know what I think it's connected to? It's a natural consequence of many years of the educational system to be loath to make someone repeat a year. You know, we have things called magnet schools or schools for the gifted. Mm-hmm. You know, we're good at complimenting, but it's difficult to discipline. It's kind of like parenting, you know. it's easy to reward your kid with ice cream than it is to punish him. Some parents got it the other way around. I'll grant you that. There are some parents that love slapping their kids and don't love buying them ice cream. But I think that's a minority. Most of us would have the difficult time with the right form of discipline. And so for years and years in our educational system, that you don't fail anybody. As a matter of fact, there's teachers who have resigned their teaching profession because they did their darndest to build up their students and get them to get better grades on their tests and what have you, but they would still fail. And I remember talking or reading about one teacher who actually said, okay, the kid didn't do any homework. He didn't do any homework. It's not that he just got the questions wrong. He just didn't turn them in. So he gave him a flunking grade, and the school principal said, you got to pass him. He goes, but he didn't turn in any grades. And the principal said, but he showed up for class.
Didn't he?
You know, he was there. And he said, that's not enough. Wow. And so there's this frustration in teachers that say, wait a minute, you've got to be able to...
And it doesn't help the student, because if you don't have that solid basic foundation, how are you going to move on?
Yeah.
And you're going to fall even further behind.
Yeah. Here's another little example of what's behind Common Core. It's stated in the curriculum for the teachers that most children, when they grow up, will only need a kind of a basic community college level in their mathematical skills. You know, and that's maybe true. I'm not going to argue with that. You don't have to be a math whiz, especially with computers today, with doing all the calculating for us. But it says maybe only 5% of the kids will be great with math. And therefore, only 5% of the kids will be allowed to take, for example, Algebra 2 or go on to higher educational. Okay, you know, I could somewhat see reason in that, you know, only the better kids. But here's the rub with Common Core is that for years now, that would have been a decision that the teacher would have made in the classroom, knowing the kid or the principal, you know, or the parent, or all four with the student involved himself, all four agents involved in that decision. Johnny, do you want to take second algebra? Do you want to go in to a higher level? Yeah, I want to do it. Well, I think you should, et cetera, et cetera. The way Common Core is set up is the federal government is going to be taking personal data as much as they can on every student and making a huge profile. And then the government officials in Washington will tell this local school principal or teacher who can take the next level course or not.
Now, why would we give that kind of power to?
Yeah, no, that's a manipulation right there.
It's like there's something else going on. Yeah. There's something
else.
There's a need. And what that personal profile is going to look like is the devil in the details, my friend. Because if you are, and here's where it gets hairy and this is where it gets difficult, if you are a pro-life defender, or you are defending marriage as an institution between a man and a woman, that will be in your profile. And do you think that those societal architects that are so wisely guide the nation that have their jobs in Washington are going to try to help advance that kind of smart kid who's a whip, he's a smart kid in math in seventh or eighth grade. But he's from a conservative political family. Forget about it, you know. And so we're facing a huge challenge. Beware when values start getting into the mix. We got to be extra careful, especially in these days, of keeping Uncle Sam out of that. God bless you for listening. We'll have to come back to this topic later. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change, AM 750 WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thoughts. The shell appears strong, but the inside...